Okay, so we have three bills this morning that we're going to be looking at. The first one is the Dad on the tax credit loan program. The second one is on home values decrease pilot program. We're going to have an information hearing as well that I thought that it had to do with mergers and foreclosure proceedings. Welcome to the committee, Representative Dabney.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Thank you so much for hearing both of these bills. It's an awfully busy morning around here today, and there's lots of things going on, and I know that some of my testifiers for House File 2241, the Tax Credit Advance Loan Program, are in other committees and may be bouncing back and forth. But if you or someone else could move that one, I'd be glad to get it going.
I'll be glad to move it. I just wanted, would you prefer to do that one or the second one?
We can start with 2341. That's just fine.
Okay. So I'll move House File 2341 to be recommended to pass and referred to the Finance Committee. Okay.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members, this is a concept that nine other states in the country have already implemented and is functioning in those states. You may know that President Obama's administration and Congress has passed through an $8,000 first-time homebuyer's tax credit. It's structured in an interesting way because it's a refundable tax credit, so provided that the taxpayer meets the income qualifications, which are $75,000 for an individual or $150,000 for a married couple filing jointly, they receive a refundable $8,000 tax credit. So if they have no other tax liability, when they file their 2009 taxes before April 15th of next year, they will receive back from the federal government an $8,000 check for having purchased a home by November 30th of this year. It's a very time-limited period. January 1 of this year to November 30th of this year, you have to have closed on your first home. One of the interesting wrinkles is you also can claim that tax credit, that same tax credit, and for a home purchase this year by refiling your 2008 taxes that you already filed by April 15th of this year and receive that $8,000 this year. The poster child in states for this advanced loan program, providing a pool of money where first-time home buyers who meet the criteria can borrow the $8,000 up front, use it to assist with down payment or closing costs, and then pay that back with the federal tax credit. The poster child is Missouri. They're a little bigger state than we are. They've already done 100 of these loans this year. They've got an additional 300 of these loans in the pipeline moving forward. And 20% of the loans they've already done have already been paid back. So it's an interesting wrinkle and structure. The idea here is through the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency and the statewide network of lenders that they already use, provide buyers, first-time home buyers, who meet their criteria, income as well as loan eligibility criteria, to borrow on who qualify for a 30-year fixed-rate loan for an owner-occupied property, to borrow against the tax credit up to $6,750. Notice we don't let them go up to the full $8,000 in case they have other tax liabilities that would reduce the full $8,000 when they receive the tax credit back either next year or this year were they to refile. Help them deepen their equity in the home by applying it towards the down payment, or allow them to use it to cover closing costs, because that often can be a significant barrier, or at least a significant expense, and then repay the funds. The way it's structured for us here in Minnesota is we create a new fund in the state treasury that's administered by the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. It's structured in that way so that there's as great a transparency in the state accounting process as possible. And as currently structured in the bill, although we're working on it, this area remains fluid. We transfer monies from both the Real Estate Education and Recovery Fund and the Contractors Recovery Fund, fill this new fund, lend out those monies, and then as borrowers pay back the loan, it goes back into the original fund, back into the fund created, and then back to repay the realtors and the contractors' fund, with the goal being that everyone is made whole by June 30th of next year, because home buyers would need to repay these loans by June 15th of next year. And of course, they would have the asset, the $8,000 tax credit, that should allow them to do that. Madam Chair, is there an amendment that was provided this committee? Because there needed to be a clarifying amendment.
Is it a small amendment that you could give us verbally? Or
well, that would be dangerous.
I know Representative Dabney, this has been a work in progress. We've been working really hard on getting it all together. So,
and Madam Chair, I will fully admit it continues to be a work in progress. The pledge of the author and the intent of the bill was to limit it to the proceeds of this loan to only being available for down payment and closing cost expenses. And I recognize that when we came forward with the current version of the bill, that as a matter of oversight, we had not included that language. And I feel obligated to do that, and I have that language, and I thought I'd provide it to the committee.
Representative Dennis, since you have another bill, I'm wondering if you could get that drafted up. I presume the finance committee would like us to have that done before it gets to.
Yeah, Madam Chair, it's scheduled this afternoon. So
okay, so is it possible?
Madam Chair, although this is the bill that will presumably be referred by Chair Carlson to the Energy Committee.
This is the one that goes to energy?
That's correct.
Oh, okay.
Then there's perhaps a little more time in that regard. The other one that would be up this afternoon.
Then, Madam Chair, if I may, let me say clearly for the record that is the intent, and it's an oversight, and I apologize to the committee. I probably got the amendment in an accordion folder somewhere, but not immediately accessible. It's probably back at on my LA's desk.
Okay. Let's see if there are some questions, comments, and the proviso is that would be available only for down payment and closing costs, but not the intent.
That is the intent.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Dabney, can you just go over the more practical parts of the loan repayment portion? And maybe I missed it in trying to do too many things. As I understand it, once they've been deemed eligible by the federal government to get the $8,000 back, we are essentially kind of giving them the $8,000 up front, and then they have to pay us back. Now, do we, is there a mechanism that we're going to automatically capture, or will the homeowner have to then just write the check when they get it back?
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, you've got the first part of the program absolutely right. You first have to demonstrate that you qualify for the federal first-time home buyer's tax credit. You then have to pledge to use the proceeds of that tax credit to pay back what would be structured as a second mortgage on the home by MHFA.
Oh.
And then apply for the tax credit. In the bill, primarily as comfort language, is language that allows the MHFA to engage in revenue recapture if you do not repay the loan. It's comfort language because MHFA believes that they already can use revenue recapture. We just thought it was the clearest for everyone if we put that in the bill. And revenue recapture is the state's ability if you have a tax refund owed to you and you owe the state takes the tax refund. As I said, Missouri's experience has been very positive on the repayment, and as structured currently with money coming from those two industry funds, the risk really lies on the industry and not at all on the state general fund.
I know that the revenue recapture for the state is for state. The potential state refunds, not necessarily the state can't revenue recapture for federal income returns. Unless, maybe I should ask that as a question. Can the state recapture revenue that you were supposed to get from the federal government?
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, I cannot answer that comprehensively. What I can say is I've explored with tax staff structuring it such that that the IRS would pay your tax credit directly to the state. That is not as straightforward as we all might like it to be, and does run into some problems in terms of priority from the Fed as to what monies get refunded to you. For instance, as you may know, if you owe outstanding child support, that is the first order of business. And where would we fit in that sort of list going down from the feds when it comes to your tax refunds? So it's not as clean and straightforward to structure that, plus possible costs to the Department of Revenue here on the state level for putting a program like that into place.
No one will have to follow, Madam Chair. I think my concern is not necessarily people's, ability to, when they get the money, not to repay it if they know that they've gotten this loan up front. It is in these tough economic times, and people are, their financial situation is tenuous almost monthly. So I could imagine someone today being in a good financial situation, go out to get, buy their first house, and then by the time that refund that they were going to get from the state, from the federal government gets there, they could be out of the job. Or their spouse could be out of the job, or their partner could be out of the job. And that $8,000 would be, very appetizing to try to make ends meet or bridge the gap between whatever financial crisis that they're in. And so I just worry about, the state being out the $8,000, not due to the fact that someone didn't want to pay it back, but due to the fact that they maybe can't, or they feel like that money would be better used in a different place. So I guess I would feel much more comfortable if, I know this is going to go on to other committees, but before it kind of gets to its final passage, that we really clarify and clear up that we're able to, to capture that income from the federal government pretty cleanly, because I just know that when people get in tough situations, and it's understandable that it would, and maybe they pay a portion of it back. Maybe it's just, I really need this $4,000 to get to pay my health care expenses that we know are growing, but I'll give $4,000 back to the state, or 100 of other ideas that they may have in order to keep themselves and their families intact. And I think that $8,000 would be hard to give back to the state if they're in that crisis.
Madam Chair, Hayden, certainly we all know the difficult economic situation we're in. Couple of reminders and a little bit of speculation. Number one, these folks would need to qualify for a 30-year fixed rate mortgage with full underwriting. The way other states have handled it is to assess that the individual could afford both mortgages, the first and second, under their current income. So the private sector bankers who participate in the MHFA loan program would be making that assessment up front. They certainly would be looking, there's probably less loans going out to people in the newspaper business than there are some other businesses these days. So they would be making some of that assessment. And secondarily, I'd remind you, as currently structured with the monies coming from the real estate fund and the contractors fund, if those funds are not made whole and more monies are needed to deal with the primary responsibilities of those two funds, that falls not to the state's general fund, but it falls to realtors and contractors in the state. Those two funds exist for consumers. If you have a bad experience with either your realtor or your builder and you need to be made whole from that experience, you can come to the state. The funds in those, the monies in those funds are derived off of assessments on licenses for those two professions. So if there is a problem with repayment of these secondary mortgages, at this time, the way the bill is structured, it is a moving target, but at this time, the responsibility would lie on those two professions who've come forward and in support of this legislation.
Representative McNamara,
thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, what about the possibility of requiring the folks that we potentially would give this upfront $6,850 to file their file an amended 2008 return so that their money is it possible that we could structure it conditional on them getting this money that they refile their 08 return, and then that I would assume would only extend us out a few months after they actually potentially would get the money, as opposed to what could be maybe 16 months or something.
Ms. Chair, or Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, frankly, my interest in having, if people were to pay it back earlier, would be to replenish this fund and allow new first-time home buyers to also take advantage of it. The full extent, under the legislation, they would need to be paid back by June 15th of 2010. Only closings, obviously, after this bill were to take effect and the program to be established would be eligible, because if you're closing today on your first home, you don't need to borrow the $8,000 to cover the closing costs. So really, it would all take place within the fiscal year that we're looking forward to, which is a pretty tight timeline and works within the state's auditing.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I guess Representative Dabney, I would recommend that we think about doing that. I think it would address some of Representative Hayden's concerns that if time goes on, something could go awry. This would allow it to be made whole, even to the point to where maybe you put something in if they decide to not refile their 2008 return, because there won't be any incentive for them to do that because it's a no-interest loan for them. Maybe we could charge a couple $100 if they decided not to amend the return. I mean, that would still be down in the neighborhood of a couple of percent. And maybe it needs to be a little more to incentivize them to refile. A lot of these folks, I'd imagine, would have a pretty simple amended return to get that $8,000. And then the other thing, I'm assuming this is impossible, but it, they can agree to have the $8,000 sent back to them, endorsed to both them and the state of Minnesota, if subject to no other tax liens. If we could look at that possibility, I guess I'm wondering if that's even legal.
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, two things. First, you and I actually are thinking along some similar lines in your first line of questioning, and I've not had the opportunity to engage MHFA on this, but wondering if we could provide some sort of an incentive through the fee structure for people to pay the loans back on an amended 08 return. Again, my interest, first and foremost, yes, is to protect the liability of this fund, but also if we can recycle it and make it available to more first-time home buyers without taking on additional risk, I think that's a benefit for the state broadly rather than the state as the entity of the state. Secondly, in terms of signing it directly over to the state, again, I've looked into some of this. That's administratively a little more difficult than it first appears. My understanding, however, is that some of the national organizations that have been working on this here with their representatives on the state level here in Minnesota and in other states are working with the IRS now on creating a form that does some of that, that signs this tax credit directly over to the state, if I understand my information correctly. So I think we're moving in a direction that makes all of us a little bit more comfortable. But some of that movement is on the federal level.
Okay, Representative Stevenson, I want to just mention to folks, you know, we got a session with scheduled, like, I guess, this morning. We heard about it. So we're supposed to be done at 11, and we've got this bill, another bill, and we were going to have an informational hearing. I'm a little concerned that we're going to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to cause any questions here. So, Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Both my questions, I think, have been answered.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, then, I'm going to recommend that House Bill 2341 be recommended pass and returned to Finance. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Dan and Finance.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Okay, next one I believe needs to get out for it to be heard today. So we need to act on that one as well.
Yes. Madam Chair and members, this, in some ways, House File, oh, Madam Chair, would you please move House File 2279? Or someone?
Go ahead and move it for you, Mr. Chair.
All right, thank you, Madam Chair.
2279 be recommended to pass in the first of finance.
In many ways, this bill was brought to me by Senator Boschwitz, who, you know, he and I have not worked together closely in the past. I can assure members of that. It's unlikely to happen again in the future. However, he apparently, the history on this home values guarantee program is he wrote a newspaper column a few months ago talking about the current struggles of the home buyer's market and said, you know, there's this guy, Larry, who did a program like this during the farm crisis where he guaranteed farmers that if they bought land in a after a certain period of time, he'd buy that land back from them if it wasn't worth at least what they paid for it. And initially people thought he was crazy, but instead it was crazy like a fox, I think is the statement, because what it did is it gave buyers the assurance that come out in the pool, the water's fine. And so Mr. Buechler, who can't be here today, retired president of retired bank president, has been working on this idea to have it apply as a pilot program in five counties here in Minnesota for homesteaded properties in Hennepin, Olmsted, Ramsey, St. Louis, and Stearns County. So we get a mix of urban and greater Minnesota areas, both with regional centers and with more rural areas of the state. You buy the home, again, 30-year fixed rate. You have to put down, I believe it's at least 3.5%, and no more than $25,000. It has to be homesteaded, and you have to hold on to the property for 5 years. If it's transferred in any way, shape, or form, essentially, for 5 years, the guarantee is null and void. At the end of the 5 years, however, through a formal process, having the home appraised and that sort of thing, you are able to determine that the value is less than the value coming in, the state will make up the difference. And the idea here again is to stabilize the housing market. We've seen in the last 5 years, or last few years, and this committee knows it better than any committee in the House, the wave of subprime mortgage foreclosures across the state. It started in my city, as the poster child, but has gone across the state along with some other significant problems. What Credit Suisse is saying is now the next wave is option arms, people who took out mortgages that allows you to decide each month what you're going to pay on your mortgage. Are you going to pay just the principal? Are you going to pay just the interest? How much are you going to pay that month? A lot of those folks are now getting caught as the foreclosure crisis drives down their property values. They can afford the house. They have been making the payments. They're fully employed, but they're now sitting with a house where the value is less than what they're paying. And some of them are looking increasingly at walking away from those mortgages and walking away from those homes. That only further pushes down the value of the market for everyone. 60% of the home transactions going on in the market today are lender mediated. They may be short sales, they may be something else, but where the seller is having to bring a check to the table to make the situation whole. That declining, ongoing decline in the market is damaging to everyone in the state, and this program, by putting a guarantee in, is an attempt to demonstrate a program that was successful in the 80s and the farm crisis can be successful today in the home mortgage crisis. With that, Madam Chair, I'd stand for questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I kind of like the concept. I've got some major concerns, though, because if you're talking about what transpired in 87 with the farm crisis, you're talking about an income-generating area, something that someone puts their business into and, in fact, can make a living. And if they have some depreciating issues going on, they they still are producing something off that farm, which creates a revenue generator. With a home, and I think we've, in the last 20 years, we've kind of had a mentality shift where a home used to be a place where you would, well, I'm sure you have a lot of members in your district who buy a house and they've lived there for 50 years. It's a place they call home. And now we've kind of turned into this mentality that it's an investment. So if we put money into it and it depreciates, if we're intending on living there for 20, 30 years, that depreciation is a cycle that's going to transpire. It's probably going to cycle its way through and come back up. But here we're saying we're going to put in a false floor on the housing market, and if you don't like what you got, for other people that the state is willing to go on record as buying you out, I guess my major concerns would be if we hit a really significant economic downturn in which people are no longer able to make their payments, the state becomes the holder of the deeds on these, and that could quickly run away. Those are some of my concerns. That we don't get our, number one, put a false bottom on the housing market, and number two, that that the state becomes a major player in the real estate market.
President Dabney, can I ask you a question? Did you mean to amend the Senate file? Did you mean to have the amendment which is in our packet? Amendment on to it?
Madam Chair, I'm sorry.
Three sides of the same.
Yeah, I can usually do two, but three was just one too many.
I was just checking.
Were you asking about an amendment?
Yeah. Did you
prefer that? Here is the challenge, and I will defer to the chair on how best to handle it. The amendment updates the bill and responds directly to Representative Stevenson's concern. On a parliamentary, I guess would be the word, basis, if we amend it in this committee, this bill is also up for hearing tonight in Representative Carlson's full finance committee, and we then run into engrossment challenges. And somebody who's smarter on these processes than I can certainly advise.
I think they should either, my opinion, maybe they need to be get it done, or you can't be working off of the I think if it's significantly different, you want to have the bill before us in the way that it needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
Madam
Chair, there are meaningful and important differences. May I ask Representative Carlson, as in his role as finance chair, as to his preference in his practice in terms of working off of unengrossed committee reports?
I'm just told that it needs to be able to be done.
Okay. Then if someone could move the H2279DE1 amendment, I would very much appreciate it, and I think that would also respond to some of Representative Stevenson's concerns.
President Dabney, I'll move the DEI amendment twice again tonight. Any discussion? Put the bill in the way that the author prefers it. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Once the bill is here, now working up the DE1 amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I think the clearest answer to Representative Severson's concerns, which are very legitimate and I appreciate them, if you go to page 3, lines 24 through 27, what you see is the state does not take over the, if the value is less in 5 years, the state does not take over the property. The state provides the buyer with the difference between the appraised property going in and the appraised property in 5 years. So it's a much smaller risk on the part of the state. The state does not want to become the landlord and does not want to become the property owner of these properties. It is, again, it's sending a message to the market that we can, based on past experience, stabilize the market. And then I think with a five-year time frame, we still do have the opportunity for the market to continue down some, but then hopefully the overall economy, as well as the impact of this program in these five targeted counties, allows it to come back up. It only has to hit the same place it started from
for there to be no liability for the state.
I think somebody must have a phone. That's the computer turned off for the census.
Yeah, follow up, Madam Chair. And I appreciate that. I'm just wondering in terms of the, is it at the five-year mark if the individual reappraises his house and says now it's worth $20,000 less than it used to be, that the state, then he has to sell his house and then the state reimburses him for the difference? Is that the way it's, I haven't had time to really read through this. Perhaps you can.
Madam Chair, Representative Severson. That is not my understanding. My understanding is that within 120 days of the fifth anniversary of the purchase of the home, the MHSA can, at the request of the owner, have an appraisal that the agency approves of. So it's a clean transaction in that respect. Appraise the home, and then the owner would remain in the home and would be paid the difference between the two appraised values, the appraisal at purchase and the appraisal 5 years later. So it does not require the homeowner to sell, leave, transfer anything of the home. It simply assures them that the value that they've put into the home stays with them and the home. And in fact, if they, for instance, move after 4 years and sell the home, the guarantee is null and void. If they sell it at a loss, if they sell it at a gain, you know, those are choices that the homeowner makes if they sell before the five-year mark. So it's a fairly narrow program in many respects.
Let me think about that for a
second.
Okay. Thank you.
Sorry about that. I have a question. I guess I didn't understand until just now that the home does not need to be sold. The person just requests an appraisal. And if there's a loss, they're reimbursed by the state for the amount of change in equity. And my question is there any requirement that that equity be directed in any particular direction, or?
Madam Chair and members, I've phoned a friend here. The owner is guaranteed the down payment, which is capped at no more than $25,000. I assume if they can come in with more and choose to, that's fine, but anything above that is not guaranteed. And then also their principal, since they've been making payments, but again, that is capped at $5,000. So they would be able to collect at the end no more than $30,000, and that would require the bottom to fall out of the market in many respects, given the lows we are at in the housing market in most areas of the state at this time. The owner can continue to live in the home. They are not selling the home. They are not mandated to sell the home, leave the home, anything of the sort. They retain their property rights.
Well, I have a question. What if the home deteriorates through neglect or through disaster? I can tell you I had a I actually cleaned up my property that was mandated by the EPA. They damaged my basement. I had water all over it. You know, if I didn't repair that myself, and I sold the house for less because the value's gone down. I'm not quite sure what's going on with loss of value that may not be necessarily market-driven. It can be the result of, damage, neglect, storm, anything that the homeowner is not able to repair, or I'm trying to understand what the options are here.
Madam Chair, thank you. Again, page 3, lines 19 through 24. The property must be free of any encumbrances, such as mechanics liens, second mortgages, or tax liens, and the inspection report done by a disinterested qualified inspector must document that the property is in substantially the same condition as the original inspection report. So again, we're protecting the, what we want to do is maintain the home values not only for the individual who's a participant in the program, but for their neighbors and the market by maintaining their home values. If I buy a home and allow it to deteriorate thinking, oh heck, you know, the state's got my back, well, that's a negative impact on all the homes in the area. That's counter to the goals of the program, and they would find at the end of those 5 years that in fact
the state doesn't have your back for abusing your involvement in this program.
Representative Mackinac. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think my concerns are along the same line as yours, Madam Chair. And I actually, Representative Dabney, would think you'd think about as you move forward mm-hmm. that maybe we actually think about them not getting their money back unless they've made some improvements along the way. In other words, we expect them to not only maintain the property, but to make improvements with the hope of increasing their value. I think it might put us in a better position to argue whether they've just let it go. Because I think, Madam Chair, if you bought an older home and didn't do anything for 5 years, it's going to, I'm sorry, I lived in one that was built in 1910. It's a constant upgrading necessary, and I would think more that maybe if we could put something of anticipating improvements to be made, and then I think that would be beneficial. So I like the intent and the spirit of it. I'm concerned, as the Chair has mentioned. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair. Representative McNamara. I don't know why I can't do your name today. My apologies. If you look on 2.4 to 2.8, you see that there is a value range, and it is tied to the municipality, reflecting that there are different average home values in different areas across the state. Homes in rural Minnesota, as a general rule, are much have a lower property value on average than in the metro. In addition, I think the challenge is, President McNamara, my first home was, I think, an 1883 home, and boy, they did it need upkeep. My current one is a 1912. It's in better shape. But if you were to use this program and buy a brand new home, because there's the builders will tell you there's stock out there sitting empty that folks built on spec at the top of the bubble and are selling for much less than they planned on. If you're buying a brand new home, I don't know that you need to maintain. I don't know that you need to upgrade within a 5-year time period.
And Representative Debbie, is that you need to maintain it? It says
it
does say something about maintenance. I saw it earlier.
Well, in that 319 to 324, you have to the inspector needs to find at the end of the 5 years if you claim, you know, under this program, if you believe that your home is worth less, you have to show that it is. Substantially, I'm looking at 3.21, substantially the same condition as the original inspection report.
And the original inspection of the avenue occurs when the home is purchased?
That's correct.
Is there a fiscal note on this?
My understanding, Madam Chair, is in the Senate they've discovered a $70,000 fiscal note for NHFA to establish the program. I believe they're still working with the agency on that note.
I see the agency is here. I wonder if the agency would like to comment on this?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Tanya Orr from the Housing Finance Agency. This home loan guarantee program, home value guarantee, the home value guarantee program would be a new program that we would have to establish. So I thought we had filed a fiscal note that requested, I think, about $70,000 in upfront costs. The ongoing cost of administering the program, which actually would be a little bit of cost between for the first 2 years and then nothing for about 3 years, and then hopefully nothing after that, but possibly we would have to be making payments out at the end of 5 years. So, but those ongoing costs would be covered by the fee that we could charge. So we just didn't have any way of absorbing the staff time, which would involve both program staff, legal, accounting, IT, to get the program up and going. And it's a really short, compressed time period. Those are the costs that we identified at this point.
Representative Dabney, and maybe Ms. Orr as well, is there any other state that's doing this or similar type of program?
Yeah.
Madam Chair, I'm not aware of other states that are doing this. I do know that Duper, the retired banker who brought forward this idea, has been working in contact across the country to look to proposing this elsewhere as a model to help stabilize the housing market. But I don't know the status of those conversations.
And I believe
there is Syracuse, New York, has done something very similar for a number of years. And it was funded through NeighborWorks, basically through HUD, through NeighborWorks. I honestly can't remember the dollar. But it's been touted recently by a professor at Yale. I think he's an economics professor. So while I haven't read the report, I assume from the fact that this guy, Yale economics professor, talking to, I think this is in Forbes actually, about that it had some success. And I'd be happy to share. I can find it. I just don't have my file with me. But I would be happy to share that information with the community.
Another question, Kevin?
Just a follow on. Worst case scenario is in, is running for a 2-year program, and as Ms. Zor was speaking, that hopefully in 5 years this doesn't, hit the fan. Where the money's coming from, and are we encumbering future legislators to the accountability on this? If we put them on a contract now, you and I may not be here in 5 years, and we're basically putting them on the hook to say, hey, you're going to have to cough up the state's good name to answer the call. Just a state, I guess, kind of a statement and a question. Is that, am I reading this correctly?
Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, you are reading it correctly. Now, Minnesota Management and Budget has stated that this would not negatively impact the state's credit rating. Those concerns are out
there.
There is not so much income eligibility as home values. The stage 2.4 to 2.8 homes with an appraised value of no less than $75,000, no more than $300,000. So you're outside kind of those jumbo loan areas, or underneath those jumbo loan areas, I guess I should say. Or no less than $30,000, no more than $74,999 if the average property value for the municipality and so on and so forth. So it is an attempt to calibrate, as I stated earlier, for different average home values in different areas of the state.
What I'm wondering, and maybe you can tell me from the other programs, is this helping in neighborhoods that are being devastated by foreclosures? Or, I mean, is this a tool that could be useful in that way? Or Representative Dabney, I don't know if that's what you're thinking. It seems like that might be the reason that there's is that
I don't know if
a good tool, or I guess well. I'm looking for a little advice. It's a concept that's new.
Madam Chair, I think that is exactly the intent, is to try and the idea is to set the floor at a higher level than the market might otherwise allow it to fall. And particularly in areas where there are lots of foreclosures, that impacts the property values of the surrounding homes, not just the homes that are in foreclosure. So if the experience with the farm crisis is a predictor of this, then this value guarantee program would help set the floor and help stabilize the housing market. It's an idea that was tested in a different context. They said the only thing that I'm aware of is Syracuse. So it's a chance that we're taking. I think that we're in a situation where we need to at least be open to as many tools as possible, because this is not a good situation in terms of the housing market.
Madam Chair, I believe that and Ms. Orr can correct me, the average home value in the metro area now is a little under $200,000.
in between 180 and 200,000 is what my memory is. So we're looking at homes, a bracket of homes from significantly below that, with a bottom of $75,000 in value, to homes that are roughly 50% above the average at 300,000, maybe slightly more, maybe 55% above the average. So there's a fair bracket. I think it captures the bottom of the market in many areas, including some areas of yours and mine, Madam Chair. I know my area is right in around the median value for the metro area, two homes that are significantly above but still well below that kind of jumbo mortgage McMansion sort of price.
Okay. Let me just see two things. One is, if we are ready to vote, are there more questions or concerns about this? Is it going to another committee?
Well, Madam Chair, it's very interesting to me, I will say. I'm also very nervous, and Representative Dabney, I'm okay with it moving to another committee. I hope you'll take a couple of the Chair's concerns. One, I wouldn't even mind if the home value went lower than 300, maybe down to what that median value is, and that if folks have a more generous income, that they would not be eligible, and even limiting, maybe don't give them all of their down payment back. Maybe they have to lose the value, or even have to go below their down payment. In other words, we get an upside down market like we're in right now, where people, not only if they don't have their down payment back, there's a lot of value in owning your own home. So those would be some of my concerns, Madam Chair, as we go forward. Because if we did end up in a situation, as Representative Severson's mentioned, that they were calling in these things, we're going to have a lot of other problems going on too if we're somewhere like this in 4 or 5 years. So just some of my concerns then.
Okay, and I wanted to just say one other thing. Unfortunately, we've run out of time. We have a room full of people who are here to testify on the issue that has to do with foreclosures and the issues of renters who are being who are damaged by that option, or other low-income homeowners. So I'm just thinking, the session was called unexpectedly and we need to go, but I'd ask you to maybe consider some of the concerns that I know they would have raised as you go forward, like what happens to the renters and the others who are in these homes, and just maybe to address that in some way that we could talk about.
Madam Chair, just to clarify and then make a point, this program is limited to homesteaded property.
If
you were to purchase it as a homestead property and then choose to rent it out, you would be withdrawing from the guarantee program. But then, of course, the value of rental property and the stability of it is based on the stability of the market and the strength of the neighborhood surrounding that property.
Okay. So, the bill is before us as amended. Any further discussion? And the bill will be referred to finance code to another, at least one more committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No.
No.
Motion failed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Now, I want to call forward the people for the last bill and just apologize, first of all. This is House File. I know it is my bill, House File 2223, but I wanted to just talk to the folks who are providing some information. I'd like to start with the presentation. Members, we are in session starting, I believe, right now. I'm not sure if the session is adjourning to go to recess.
Going to caucus.
Okay. And we need to go to caucus. But so first, let me apologize. We didn't know when we scheduled this that there was a session committee scheduled in such a short period of time, and I see you've brought a fabulous group of people to testify. So I wanted to give you a choice. I'm willing to stay here and go late to the caucus. On the other hand, you may want us to reschedule this so you can have a full committee, or if there's some people who can't come back another day. So I just wanted to give you that option, and so sorry, this is the way it worked out for today. Can I get an opinion from you? Well, we can try to... It would be in the next couple of days, perhaps tomorrow. Let me just... Here's a story, and let me just tell you. We are getting the schedule, and for some of you who aren't so familiar with the legislative process, the sessions are being scheduled like the night before or the day before. It's an unusual time of the year. This is not the way things usually are done. Usually we all have much more notice. We can plan and so on. So I just...
So if we only have 15 minutes of testimony, this committee cannot stay... At this point, people took off work.
Well, some members of the committee might be willing to stay. I just know that we're required to be in session. But you know, I think why don't we hear from the people who took off work and cannot come back? Would that be all right? And then we can plan another hearing where we'll actually, you know, have a full hearing on this. Would that be okay? Okay, but let me just, first of all, members, say that the bill before us is House Bill 2233, a bill that I'm offering, and any of the members who'd like to say, I appreciate that. And the others who need to go on, that's not a sign of they're not...
I'd like to say that I need to be over rather than...
I understand. All right. So, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Clark, and members of the committee. My name is Stephanie York. I'm a member of AFSCME Local 3800, the clerical workers at the University of Minnesota. Phyllis Walker, the president of our union, is unable to be here today because of contract negotiations, and since I'm not able to reschedule for her, I appreciate you staying to hear our testimony about this very important bill in terms of the moratorium on foreclosures. It's obviously no secret, we've been talking about it all morning, that the working class people in Minnesota are certainly in the grip of a huge economic crisis, an economic crisis that threatens our jobs, our homes, and everything that we've struggled to build for our families. The way the economic crisis has been dealt with so far has not worked for us. The money that was funneled to the banking industry, $700 billion, has not and will not trickle down to our members. As the unemployment rate continues to climb, and we'll likely see 10% or better by the end of this year, and the economy worsens, it becomes more and more evident that we need a bailout of our own. There's been discussion and money allocated in theory for help with restructuring people's mortgages from the federal at the federal level. The fact is that currently only about a half dozen of those restructuring loans have been made. From the federal government, and while the banks have gotten $700 billion released, only a few hundred thousand has been released to help working people restructure their mortgages and avoid foreclosure. Home values make up more than 75% of the assets of most of our members, and the collapse in housing values will continue to be a long-term crisis. People have invested in their homes not as investment property, but with the hope that they would be able to use that investment to send their children to college, and as savings for their retirement. Right now, 22% of Americans owe more on their homes than their home is worth, and some projections are that by the end of the year, 70% of homeowners will be underwater. This translates into a major disaster for our members, and we need to keep our members in their homes during this economic crisis. More and more people are telling us about how desperate their lives have become. Last week, a clerical worker at the U told Phyllis about her situation. She was laid off from her second job and doesn't know how she's going to pay her mortgage because she's been relying on her second job to help her pay her mortgage and her expenses, especially as she hears about possible layoffs at the University of Minnesota. Another person talked about their husband, who had worked for a trucking company for many years, being downsized, and he lost his job, and they want to sell their home instead of losing it to foreclosure, but with so few people on the market and housing values collapsing, they're not sure that they can find a buyer. What we need is a moratorium on foreclosures to stabilize our members and keep them in their homes during this period of economic crisis. A moratorium on foreclosures benefits our communities, it benefits all the people of Minnesota, and keeps the people like our members who make $38,000 a year are the majority of people in Minnesota. And a foreclosure moratorium in this context of rising unemployment, and I do think it will surpass 10% and even better before it's done. It's really what we need in order to have it create stability for our members. Now, a moratorium on foreclosures would also help those members who aren't homeowners, who are renters. Many of our members are renters, because it would keep them in the leases if the properties that they own or the properties that they're renting are foreclosed upon. Many times our members are renting a building, paying their rent on time, not even aware that the landlord is in foreclosure proceedings until they get an eviction notice from the sheriff. And we need a situation where our families can maintain their stability. This moratorium has been endorsed by the St. Paul Regional Labor Federation, Amalgamated Transit Union 1005, United Food and Commercial Workers 789, United Care Local 17, AFSCME 3800, and AFSCME Council 5. It's been endorsed by so many organizations of working people because it's desperately needed. And it's needed now to provide immediate relief to Minnesotans. And you, as legislators, have the power. It was done in the 1930s. It survived a Supreme Court challenge. It is possible for the state to declare an economic emergency and enact a moratorium on foreclosures. We're not asking that people don't have to pay anything to live in their homes. We're asking people to get a period of time where they pay something akin to rent, where they can stabilize, and hopefully these refinancing programs from the federal level will come down and allow people to restructure their mortgages and maintain their family homes. Thank you so much for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Wait, this is, any questions, comments from members? I did want to ask you one question. You gave a number of attached to the number of homes that have actually been restructured through the federal government. Could you tell me again what that number was?
I'm sorry, I don't have the source for it because I saw it on there was a story on CNN, so I'm not sure what the journalist source was. But it was basically a few dozen homes have been restructured through the federal refinancing program. It's really not touching people like our members.
Right. Very shocking.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought that's what it was.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. No further questions. Is there another person who'd like to testify today? And again, I want to say we're willing to reconvene this whole committee when it's possible. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you so much.
Could you introduce yourself, please?
My name is Leslie Parks, and I'm here on behalf of my mother, Decora Parks. Her home is going to have the sheriff's sale scheduled for the 29th of this month. And she basically was the victim of a predatory lender. And there's just, the bank has just been playing games with her constantly playing games. They won't sit down and try to work with her. And now they're going to sell her home. And, three generations of my mom's, three generations of Parks have lived in that house. Me and my mom and my 88-year-old grandmother. And, it's just to have them kick us out. And we've been in that house for 21 years now. 21 years. So this isn't something where my mom is trying to get rich or anything like that. This is family. And we're just wondering where the heart is. You know, where's the compassion? Where are the things that were promised to help the average person in this situation? Because at the end of the month, we don't know what we're going to do. And all we're asking is this moratorium on these foreclosures. And please help us. Please help us stop this sheriff's sale coming on the 29th of this month. Please.
And Ms. Parks, did you say that there haven't been efforts to negotiate with the bank? Is it a bank that this was brought to?
Yes.
Do you mind sharing which bank?
IndyMac Bank.
I'm not familiar with that. Is that a
They're out of Phoenix, Arizona. I guess it's one that the broker had, the lending broker had brokered for her. And basically what happened was my mom, she said, I want the same kind of mortgage I always had, which she always had a fixed rate. She didn't know it was called an ARM. She didn't know it was called an adjustable rate. But she said she wanted the same kind of mortgage she always had in the past. Well, this mortgage broker gave her an ARM anyway. Obviously, I found out later he got the most commission from an ARM. And she had no idea she even had an ARM until a company by the name of Primerica came in, and they know this happens all the time. People have no idea the terms of their mortgage. So they go in and they educate people. Mm-hmm. And the guy, once he took the paperwork, read it, he looked at us like he had seen a couple of ghosts. That's how bad this mortgage was.
I don't know why, but I continue to be shocked by the level of deceit that even our laws have not anticipated, I guess. Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering, though, if there are some illegalities here that... first of all, I support the moratorium myself. Of course, I was here when we did a moratorium on foreclosures with our farm. It required mediation to happen. And I think what some of what between the banks and some of the lending agencies and the farmers, and I know that it was a useful tool. The laws that have been passed recently are supposed to be somewhat helpful for mediation, but it sounds like you've tried and you've got no assistance. And have you, I'm just wondering about contacting even some of our state agencies, the Department of Commerce or the Attorney General's Office.
I was able to file a complaint against the mortgage broker through the Attorney General, but that company is out of business now. That company is out of business, and this particular loan broker now works for Wells Fargo.
Didn't have trouble getting a job.
No. And this particular loan broker has a past of foreclosures. Everyone he's ever dealt with in foreclosure.
I can tell you, and again, this may not be great comfort, but in my own neighborhood, there was a broker who was actually a real estate person who was working with a number of people in a community, and actually a non-English speaking community. Then he happened to speak the same language, and he, you know, did a lot of really bad mortgages. And what the people in my neighborhood were able to do was to bring a complaint against him. He lost his license. He could never practice in the state of Minnesota again. Now, I don't know. That doesn't immediately help your situation, but I'm just saying that might be something we should think about. I don't know if there's nothing in this bill that attaches right now, I think, to the broker, but maybe that's something we should look at as well. Any other comments or questions? Okay. Well, I appreciate your testimony. Tell me, where do you live?
In South Minneapolis, 3749 Park is my address.
Well, you're nearby, and listen, you even had to go over to the legislature, but I'm just thinking might be worth a call to talk with him. Maybe together we can at least see if there's some ways to look at your specific situation. We do need to change the law. There's nothing short of the moratorium that's probably going to help a lot of our folks that are in this situation and all that. But we can see if there are any other legal remedies for now.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Appreciate your coming today.
I think the rest of us will be able to come back, but I just wanted to say a few words before this is over, and that is that as good as an informational hearing is, first of all, we're seeing bills go through that are helping people buy new houses, that are taking care of abandoned houses. There's nothing going through that's actually going to help families stay in their home. There is no moratorium language this year, although there is language that's sitting in one committee, and there's language sitting in another committee. And actually, what we would like to see is the next hearing that brings that language forward for an actual vote. Obviously, the committee can vote on these things and can move this stuff along. And this is the year that that has to happen. So we would like to see if those bills, is there a way to have, when we reschedule this hearing, to actually have this bill move forward and not be only informational. Mm-hmm. Because this bill is sitting in the legislature, and it deserves to have a vote, and the moratorium deserves to be passed through this year, just as it was last year. This is something that's unprecedented. It cannot wait another year. You can hear families are suffering, and this is the worst situation we've been in with these foreclosures. So there are two bills that have this language in it, and we would actually like to have this bill passed out of this committee.
Thank you for that comment. One of the things that we were trying to do was to see if we could have an actual hearing on this bill in this committee, and we need to go through a process that it might take a while. We could try. I think it might run into big trouble on the floor, which is why I wanted to get a hearing right away with you to start with the informational hearing and maybe build a little momentum. And I don't know if the other bill you're still representing
line. Yes, it is. And I don't know what possibility there is to bring it forward up, but I will continue to check.
It is in civil justice as well?
I think it's in Representative Dabney's committee currently.
Oh. Okay, well let's see if we can have a little
it's a part of a larger bill. All we need is that part of that bill to come forward. We need to get it.
Well, I think you've got commitment at least from me and we can see what we can do in terms of moving it. Just for those of you who wonder why this might be difficult, to move a bill that's in a committee, it has to go through the floor, where it then becomes, according to the Italian recent months, any bills that have controversy attached to them tend to have a whole huge debate. But it doesn't mean we can't try, and I think that's what we'll try to do. Let me just also ask you, would you like to, though, continue the informational hearing on this, or do you want to just wait and see that we try to get a hearing where we actually have a bill in possession, which it may be that it wouldn't be this committee if we could talk Representative Dabney into hearing the bill, your bill. That might be an option. And Representative Mullery is where my bill, this one, resides, and we can try to talk with him, although I believe you have talked with him, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Well, we did request a hearing. So, all right, well, let me just do a little more checking on that. We both will be doing that.
So I think we should schedule a hearing to continue the informational, and then the effort to be made to actually let us get a vote.
Okay. So if you can meet afterwards with my staff, we'll try to figure out a time to have that. And thank you for coming in. Thank you for your patience. I'm sorry that we didn't get have more time to discuss this. Kind of the nature of the legislative hearing right now, everything is unpredictable. So thank you for your time, and the meeting is adjourned.